Hello and welcome to the Villa Filler podcast. I'm here as always with my good friend Dan Wiseman. Dan, Everton 0, Aston Villa 0. Unai Emery has finally drawn a Premier League game 0-0. It only took him 93 attempts. That's crazy.
That is crazy, mate. That is crazy. You're absolutely right. I'm sure everybody knows that by now, though.
Yeah, that's true.
Commentators just have been like going at it nonstop. But there's been more 0-0s in Aston Villa against Everton. Or something like that. No, there've been more 0-0s in Aston Villa games and Everton games in Premier League history than any other side has in Premier League history, or something like that. I saw a statistic earlier. So if it was going to happen to Unai, it's probably going to happen in this game. I did think we were going to snatch it at the end. We had some good chances. But hey, we move.
Football heritage. That is what that is, mate. That is football heritage. It's, I watched the first half. I wasn't really around for the second. I've sort of caught up on match of the day. Thankfully, I was not looking at my phone for the whole evening because, you know, you sort of log on and I think I probably saw more tweets about a meltdown than actual meltdown tweets. But
it happens a lot.
It does,
doesn't
it, right?
This with Villa Twitter. People are always like, ah, oh, no. Going crazy at people having a meltdown, and I just never. Maybe I'm following the wrong people.
I didn't see the meltdown either, but I mean, I, and again, you know, caveated with the context of how I sort of viewed the game and have subsequently caught up with it. Is there really cause for a meltdown? I think, you know, again, we're kind of sat here, mate, talking about a game where, you know, Villa have dominated again away from home. They've looked very convincing. They've had their fair share of possession. Created a handful of chances, obviously scored the one goal that was offside. There's two penalties, which, you know, maybe at least one of them is given by a different referee. But we're kind of, you know, not to complain, because I felt there was a comment that bugged me the other day, actually. Somebody commented, and I replied to them as well. I need to get better at replying to comments. Generally, if people reply to comments, it's Dan. Dan's great at doing that. I need to get better. But there's this one comment that got me, and it was like, whenever I need to sort of, you know, come back down to reality, I listen to the Villa Filler, and, you know, I'm pessimistic as hell. And I'm thinking, hang on, as far as I'm concerned, we're glass half full guys, man. We're glass half full guys. But what I would say is that we are grounded in realism. But we're definitely probably, like, I would say we're optimistic. And that comment really... I really got under my skin, actually, because I'm like, that's like the furthest thing from the truth, or at least that's how I feel about, you know, you and I, mate. And so I don't want to come on here and sound like I'm being a negative Nancy, because, you know, if I'm sort of judging by what this potential Twitter meltdown was, people are obviously upset that we didn't win and the penalties and all that, and I totally get the thing with the penalties and the refereeing and that Tarkowski challenge on Diaby was... very heavy, but it was also just very James Tarkowski, really, wasn't it, mate? But like, yeah, I mean, it's almost like it's hard to complain on games and days like this because, you know, shit happens, really, doesn't it? Like, it's just one of them games, and I feel like if anything, like, and you can tell me if I'm wrong, mate, I feel like us as Villa fans are probably feeling the pressure more about this title race and this Champions League race than the players are, because, you know, we're sort of reacting after any sort of slight dip in form to be like, oh, we're not going to win the league, or now we're not going to get top four. Do you know what I mean?
Yep. Mate, absolutely. Absolutely, I do. This is, I think, honestly, like, I don't really care what iteration of Everton we're talking about. You know, this could be 5 years, 10 years, 15 years. Goodison Park is always a difficult place to go and play football. Always, always, always. I really do believe that, like, a win at Goodison Park is up there with, you know, one of the toughest results you can go on the road and achieve in the Premier League, particularly at the moment with Sean Dyche as the manager. It's always hostile. It's always going to be physical. And I thought we stood up to that test, right? I think, you know, to talk briefly about the penalty, it's an unfortunate kind of collision. It is heavy from James Tarkowski, but as you say, it is what you would expect of, you know, the atmosphere which I've just described at Goodison Park, right? It's not crazy. I think Diaby, he's lucky to not get an injury, I will say that. But to kind of go back, I've seen more people, almost more people, talking about the fact that he should have gone down under the Mykolenko challenge, in inverted right. commas, beforehand. And that's where I really disagree, because that's not a foul. That's not a foul. And I don't, you know, I understand that, yes, I think he probably could have gotten a penalty from a VAR check if he'd gone down, because there's contact. But all level-headed football fans will look at that and say, that's not a foul. It's given a lot in the Premier League. And so whilst it's given as a foul, I don't think in my utopian footballing world, contact that minimal. We don't want to see that, man. We see it all the time in the Premier League. Players, tiny touches, they throw themselves to the ground. We can't lambast Bruno Fernandes every time we play Man United and then be looking at challenges like that. Like, go down, loser, go down.
Yeah,
like,
you're right.
We've got to... No. It's unfortunate. It's a fine challenge. It is. Yeah, 100%. It's a fine challenge from Tarkowski. The aftermath and the kind of follow-through is a little bit heavy. I will say that. But, you know, again, I think those kind of challenges are... that it's more fair than unfair, I would say. And so... Yeah, I kind of feel whenever nil-nils occur, refereeing decisions are always put at the heart of it. My position as a kind of a refereeing apologist, we might say, it does get harder by the week to take that stance, I will say. But yeah, whenever you get a nil-nil, you're going to look at the all of the things throughout the game that stopped it being a nil-nil, basically. And obviously, we had the ball in the back of the net. And then there were a couple of penalty shots as well. So those kind of things have risen to the fore.
Absolutely. And I think the thing is as well, as you kind of said, mate, about the atmosphere, just what it's like to go to Goodison Park in any case, for this to be the final game of our winter festive run-in, however you want to look at it, and us now have this week off with the Premier League winter break, the fact that we've got through that, one, unscathed with any additional injuries, because again, you know, on another day, that's an injury for Moussa Diaby. We haven't lost. It's a point gained away from home.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, like, I get this is me being glass half full. So whoever commented that, screw you. You know, like, that's all we could really ask for. These guys have put themselves through so much. And, you know, I think I saw the other day, you know, the little graphics on TV as Ezra Conte was warming up. He started every single Premier League game under Unai Emery.
Yeah.
Like, I think he's the only player to do that as well, which is absolutely insane. Ezri Konsa needs a break, as does John Lee, as all of these players, they need a break. You know, fly these guys off to Dubai, get them wherever. Like, they've earned their next couple of days off. And as I say, this running, it was so important. It was so crucial that we escaped it unscathed. And we have. And all we can ask for is that we're still in contention for top four, which, on, you know, current form, we absolutely are, mate, aren't we?
Yeah. Look, as you say, mate, I like that. I like the clean sheet on the road. It keeps us in the top four. And yeah, it's difficult at this, you know, when you go and see KDB come on the other night for Newcastle, right?
Right.
And like, you know, Man City, they are back, ladies and gentlemen. They are back in a big way. This KDB remontada is going to hit us all like a ton of bricks. The league, as far as I'm concerned, is done. Right, so they are past us. Villa, I would be surprised if we are any higher than third for the remainder of this season. And let me get this. That's fine.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's totally cool. That is great. If you had been in a coma and you'd fallen into a coma in the summer and you'd woken up now and you looked at the table, your first reaction would be, oh my God, the Villa are doing so well. And we are. And you know, it's not, you know, getting in the Champions League would be amazing, but that is a real, real ask from here on out. It's a real, real ask. And it's not to say it's impossible, but at the end of the day, you know, even if we finish in the Europa League, that's still amazing. That's still amazing. It's year over year progression. That's what this club is all about. It's a great stepping stone from the Conference League into the Europa League. It gives you a second way of then qualifying for the Champions League if you should win the Europa League. And we have the best manager in the Europa League, like Europa League's entire history at the helm, ready to take charge of that club in that competition. And so, like, all things considered, when you look at the clubs that we're in and around, you look at, you know, Spurs are going to get some good players back. Arsenal, they're struggling a little bit in front of goal, but I think we've seen enough of them to know that those struggles might not continue for the longest time. And then after that, I think that's where, you know, it really, really does open up when you look at West Ham, Man United and everything like that. So Villa are in a great spot at the moment. We've got a difficult game at home next, and I'm glad that we've got a bit of a rest before that. But let's honestly, like, it is like, I genuinely do believe the right way to look at this 0-0 is a point on the road with a clean sheet. There's no injuries. We're going to a 2-week break now. The lads are off on holiday. You know, they're all going to be going checking out, having a bit of a breather, which is needed. It's a chance to get guys back on it. You know, we get 2 weeks to get guys back on the grass at Bodymore, helping out with their injuries, you know, get Yuri back up to full speed and everything like that before we can come back to Villa Park in what is a massive game. So, yeah, honestly, I think considering how difficult Goodison has been to go for like a lot of teams so far this year, I think the longer it goes on at 0-0, the kind of more that the home side grow into it. I think sides have picked up good results there because they've gone in and killed that atmosphere early. You know, you look at the Garnacho overhead kick, you look at what City did there. Early goals, you can take the wind out of that crowd, but I think they're always going to be aggressive, and the more that the game goes on, the more the challenges start flying in, that crowd gets up for it. It just gets harder and harder. So honestly, we walk out 0-0. I think that's fair.
How big is that save by Emi, by the way, as well? The one-on-one with Calvert-Lewin. That's just ridiculous, man. And the screenshots as well that have sort of been floating around from directly behind Calvert-Lewin, and Emi's, you know, facing the goal. He's not even looking at him. And everyone's going, why is he not scored? Like, that's just what Emi does, man. He's just world-class. That save. I'm sure you've probably seen Villa's TikTok, the sort of parallels between the Kolo Muani save and the World Cup final as well, mate. It's like, it's the same kind of save, but just on the other side. And
yeah,
you know, it's moments like that, you know, you think sometimes maybe we do take this guy for granted. You know, we've got the best goalkeeper in the world. Well, sadly, not according to the FIFA Pro Best 11 of the year. That's a bit dodgy, mate. The fact he weren't even nominated. I'm looking at that team and it's just absolutely scandalous, mate. It is absolutely scandalous. But nevertheless, it was a massive save from Emi, and he did really well for that. And I mean, we finally got some players to talk about, mate, in terms of transfer rumour mills, haven't we? It's been a little bit quiet on the transfer rumour mill front, and we are probably a day or two late, but it's only fair that we talk about Red Star Belgrade's Kosta Nedeljković. I think I've pronounced that correctly. 18 years old, mate. We're talking about a player that was born in 2005. We're getting old. We are getting old.
Do you think it's time to give up, mate? Going pro and the dream's over.
I think the dream's over. Do you know what it is? Not that I ever thought that the dream was on, right? But one of my mates up here in Sheffield, a professional footballer. I played head tennis with him 2 months ago. He was like, "Come round, come to my place. Let's play head tennis." Anyone who doesn't know, I'm a centre half who just hits people and hoofs the ball upfield. That's all I do, right? So come on, head tennis, tiny little court. First to 11.
And this guy, like, just for he plays regularly, right?
In the Premier League.
This is no lies.
Yeah, this is honestly starts in the Premier League every week for his club, and I don't score a single point. We played like 10 rounds, and he was even doing it like weak foot only, heads only. All these little rules to make sure I could try and score at least one point. And I couldn't even do that. I couldn't kick a ball over a little like, you know, the tennis. Tennis nets. I couldn't do that. That was really humbling. That was actually.
Yeah, man.
So, you know, that's the day I realized that maybe at, you know, the grand old age of 24, it's too late for me. But the levels as well.
Present.
The levels are just crazy. And I mean, even if I was, you know, back in my day when I was somewhat better than I am now, I don't think I'd be able to score a single point. But yeah, and I mean, I think the thing is as well, like, I forgot where I was going with that. Where was I going with that? Kosta Nedeljković, right? These guys, I think, from such a young age as well,
yeah,
you don't realize like how in tune these guys are with their bodies. Like, these guys are absolutely crazy. This is an 18-year-old who's starting for their club in the Champions League. 18 years old. He's played over 1,000 minutes of football so far this season for Red Star in both the league and the Champions League. Got himself an assist. I will say, I don't know too much about this guy, but this feels like it's got Monchi and Emery's hands all over it, mate. Like, these are the kind of signings that we were expecting to make mm-hmm. under Monchi, under Emery. And the deal's quite interesting, isn't it, mate? Because he's not necessarily staying, coming to Villa straight away. And I feel like that's really interesting because we've both said a number of times, whilst Ezri Konsa is probably the best right back at the club, he shouldn't be playing there and we need a right back. So it's kind of crazy that we're, you know, looking to sign this guy, we're talking €8 million, and keep him at Red Star for the end of the season.
Yeah, man. This is interesting. This is like, you know, 3 years into a Football Manager save kind of deals. And I love it. I'm really, really excited. This guy, yes, you're absolutely right, mate. Quite a hefty fee. It's not an elephant in the room. It's not outrageous. Just under €9 million, according to Fabrizio. John Townley of the Birmingham Mail says it's around £6.5 million plus add-ons. So it's no snip. He's going to be loaned back to Red Star until the end of the season, as you rightly say, mate. Red Star also have a 12% sell-on clause. That's according to reports in Serbia. And I understand that reports in Serbia that are reporting on this are very reputable. So I think we can take that. Not as a kind of guarantee, but, you know, there's something to bear in mind with the deal. 2005, mate, as you say, crazy. 18 years old. A lot of caps for the Serbian unders. It's a very exciting prospect indeed. There's a good comp that I saw on Twitter. There's not a lot in terms of highlights of this guy, but I saw one today, him playing against Manchester City earlier this season in the Champions League, which was obviously, it's very recent, and most interesting of all, which makes it particularly great for Villa fans, is he was on the wing defending against Jack Grealish. And so it's a nice, you can watch the clip knowing kind of how good Jack is, and you can kind of get, you know, it's an opposition that we see all the time. You can see him up against Manchester City. I'd highly recommend like searching out the video because it's a really good insight into what he's like. His movement is very good. I think, again, he's going to be a very attacking fullback, as is kind of, that seems like the right back mold that we've been kind of going for. His movement is excellent. He gets up that line really, really nice. He seems to bring a lot of energy. Obviously, I've not watched the full 90. I'm going off highlights and compilations and everything like that. But yes, it looks like there's still perhaps a little bit of work to do in the final third in terms of decision making. We'll find an 18-year-old right back anywhere in the world that's not the case for. So I'm not going to hold that against him. This is a really, really exciting proposition. And as we rightly say, mate, this is what we're going to see more and more. And I'm not just talking about Villa, I'm just going to talk about clubs in the Premier League. They're going to cut out the middleman. We're, you know, Brighton are esteemed at doing this. Everyone wants to be like Brighton. You know, they're going to go directly to source, unearth these talents and bring them through, nurture them ourselves. And it's really exciting. It's really exciting. I think the jury is still a little out on someone like John Duran. Right. I think it's fair to say, I think, you know, that was the last time I imagine the Villa analytics and scouting department walked into Monchi's office and went, I've got it. And so we're exactly 12 years on in the January window from that signing. John Duran, jury still out. You know, it's been tumultuous, I'd better say the least, but I see the green shoots, I see the vision, and I've got no doubt it'll be the same with this guy.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think as well, it's kind of like, you kind of have to speculate to accumulate with these guys, and you sort of, I don't really think we enter negotiations like this, you know, fully in control or anything like that. You know, this is a young lad who, you know, quite clearly, there's got to be other clubs around Europe that are potentially looking at him. You know, Red Star hold a certain amount of power with these negotiations. So, you know, when you allude to the sell-on fee, all that, it all makes sense, yeah. Right? It just, to me, adds to the legitimacy of this link. And obviously, you know, we've seen quite a few reputable guys, as you mentioned, mate, from our side report on this as well. So it does make you think that there is something in this. There is part of me, though, and, I don't want to tempt fate, does this feel somewhat like, you know, a story that we've seen before, mate? Does this feel like Mr. Frederic Gilbert? He's, you know, the sort of buy, loan back, you know, we'll have a look at you in the summer and then we'll sort of go ahead. I don't know. I don't know. But what I do know is that I think we're going to see a lot more deals, not necessarily around this price range, but when you look at today, the fact that Nottingham Forest and Everton again have been sanctioned for breaching, you know, profit and sustainability rules in the Premier League, this is something that we're going to have to keep a close eye on, isn't it, mate? Because I think whilst we're sort of floating above that line for now, from at least my understanding of the financial situation at the club, it wouldn't surprise me if one player had to go, like one sort of, like, you know, regular first team player. Let me get that, because, you know, whilst getting rid of someone like Chambers or Dendonka would free up probably a lot of money off the wage bill, because I think them guys got thrown a fair wedge when they signed. It's going to be, you know, potential other academy sales that helps out. Then again, you know, I was thinking about this the other day. I was speaking to some family members about it. Sheffield United go down. Reports are saying we're obliged to buy Cam back for like 20 mil. So it's kind of like, well, and it's almost sort of the same with Philogene, apparently, where if Hull come up, we buy him back and then we sell on. And listen, I think, based on form and just how teams are doing, you probably don't really have a difficult time flipping Philogene. But Cam, whilst the talent's there, and everybody who listens to this podcast knows that we adore Cam Archer, maybe, just maybe, he's probably a bit more difficult to sell after, you know, his sort of first season starting as a striker in the Premier League for Sheffield United. But that's something else to consider, I guess, mate. But there's been another exciting link. I say exciting, I don't know. You tell me, are you excited by this one, mate? Are you excited by Emil Smith-Rowe to Aston Villa? Because again, this is a story we've read before.
Right. He's a very good player. Put my cards on the table. But, like, there's clearly a player there, right? This, my qualms are, where in the squad? What's the pecking order? We seem... You know, I understand that Buendia's not here right now, but he's going to be coming back. And it all feels like there's a kind of big cluster of players there in McGinn, in JJ, in Bailey, in Diaby, in potentially Emil Smith-Rowe. Yet, they're all kind of floating in and around two positions. And look, I feel that this story, I'm not going to say that there's no legs to it. We obviously know that Unai Emery either gave Smith-Rowe his debut or was very involved in bringing him through the academy and kind of establishing him in the first team. And there was a lot of promising signs from Emil Smith-Rowe. We were linked to him when his stock was really, really high. Arsenal gave him the number 10 shirt, I'm sure we'll all remember. But this is kind of where it's either very lazy journalism, because I feel that anybody who's kind of on the periphery at Arsenal will get linked to Aston Villa. Right, just because of Unai and everything like that. And so, but, you know, on the basis that rumours that kind of trundle on for a few seasons and normally have an element of truth to it, the more that when a kind of transfer rumour, I'm not going to say this is a transfer saga, far from it, but, you know, when it becomes more one than the other, it's normally because there's a substance there. And, you know, this is not the first journalist to report on this story. It depends on the price tag, because as we were just saying, you know, this is Arsenal. This is someone that we know they're interested in Douglas Luiz. We know that that's not necessarily going to be easy for them to buy a player of Douglas Luiz's caliber, but given that they've just dropped 100 million on Declan Rice, I think we demand a similar fee for Douglas Luiz, and helping them out by giving them X amount of million, and this won't be a cheap deal, of pure profit for an academy product. You know, if these are the things in the modern Premier League you have to factor in. How are you helping your rival clubs from an FFP point of view? And I can't believe that, like, we're here, but this is where we are, ladies and gentlemen. This is what being a football fan in the Premier League is like in 2024. And so, I don't know. I think, look, there's a universe where we sign Emil Smith-Rowe and he finds his feet and he's fantastic. There is definitely that universe. I don't know, man. I don't know how to feel. Maybe if this story fleshes itself out a bit, maybe if we get an idea of the fee, of the contract, maybe of the wages, I can get a better idea on this one. Like, in a dream world, would I like Emil Smith-Rowe to play for Villa? Absolutely. He's a really good footballer. But obviously he's not going to come cheap. And I just, there are positions I would address first.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, like, you know, Smith Rowe's had a bit of a difficult time when it comes to injuries and sort of staying fit. And, you know, maybe that's a case of too much too soon at such a young age. You know, it's a lot for you know, a young body, all that kind of thing. He clearly is a great player. And obviously there is history on our side. As you said, mate, you know, this is a player that we were, you know, trying to get as almost the Grealish replacement. You know, I think it's pretty well documented that Christian Perslow annoyed quite a lot of people at Arsenal over trying to lowball them for Smith Rowe. So, you know, it's one of them where it's like, I feel like there's so many players right now that are sort of thriving in that same position. And yeah, he's very Cole Palmer, isn't he? Do you know what I mean? Like, I mean, well, Cole Palmer's very Emil Smith Rowe, I guess, you know, he came before him. But you know, there's a couple guys sort of kicking about at the moment, sort of operating in that sort of 10 position, which is kind of coming back into fashion. And I'd be interested to see how he would sort of line up for us, because, you know, you sort of see it online all the time. You know, you can't escape Arsenal fans online, can you? And I remember reading in the summer that they weren't going to sign a Xhaka replacement per se. I know they signed Rice and, you know, they've sort of addressed other areas of the squad, but I remember reading that that Arteta was really keen on coaching Smith Rowe into performing the Granit Xhaka role. And I was like, Jesus Christ, really? You're going to have him as your box-to-box midfielder, Emil Smith Rowe. Very talented kid, but I just don't see how that would work. And I mean, I guess that comes down to Mikel Arteta's style of management and sort of maybe using the best of what he's got. You know, obviously, you know, as you said, mate, they spent a lot of money on Declan Rice. Where can we save? How can we get the most out of the squad we've got? But it's like, oh, well, he certainly wouldn't play in the sort of Granit Xhaka role for us, because that would be the Douglas Luiz role or the Boubacar Kamara role. And obviously, with no experience playing that role, you're not going to come straight in. So it's one of them. I think I'm leaning more towards this is lazy journalism. You know, this is going to make a great title for this video. So, you know, thank you, Alex Crook and TalkSport for that. Because, boy, we needed a transfer rumor to talk about, mate, didn't we? We really needed this. But I just don't see a lot in it, personally, mate. I don't know. I think a lot, Unai Emery's, specifically, Emery's signings at Arsenal, a lot of them, I feel, not all of them, he certainly didn't have 100% hit rate. Let's, you know, keep that pretty clear and transparent. But, you know, he discovered Gabriel Martinelli, signed him for, what, £2 million? So, like, Emery's got some talent ID, and I just think, like, Emil Smith Rowe, like, I remember in the summer, Arsenal were like, yeah, you want Reece Nelson? 30 million for Reece Nelson. Who's paying £30 million for Reece Nelson? Just imagine how much they'd demand for Emil Smith Rowe. And I think that's where I'm like, well, you know, let's trust the judgment of Munchie or Emery on someone like Nijelkovic from Red Star, or Emery, you know, finding that German Martinelli from Brazil. Like, let's sort of push the boat out a little bit, because, like, at least you're talking at least 30 million, maybe even 40 million for Emil Smith Rowe. And as you say, what do we gain from that? What do we get, like, financially? We don't. Like, all we're doing is making Arsenal's books look even greener. So, like, I think there's probably better places to look in terms of value and quality of player. And I think reliability is the main thing. And this isn't to say that Smith Rowe's a bad player at all, because, you know, on his day, he is, you know, he's scintillating to watch. And I'm sure if you went back 3 years on the channel and looked at our first Smith Rowe rumour mill, you would see Dan and I going, yes, give us this guy. But I don't know, it's not as, like, straightforward signing the same guy from when 3 years have passed, has it, mate?
No, absolutely not, mate, absolutely not. It, you know, I kind of feel this, yeah, I'm not convinced. I don't think this is it. I will remain to see a little bit more if this story kind of filters through, but it doesn't really feel like something we do in January either way. This feels like a lot of money that is going to go into this, and I don't really feel like that's, you know, it's a good time in the year to do that. So yeah, let's sit around, wait and see. You know, we've kind of been saying that there's been a one in one out policy at the club. That's something that's been echoed from what Unai's been kind of saying in his press conferences. So it looks like the out is already on the way. It looks like Kane Kessler-Hayden has been recalled with a view to another lane or potentially a loan, sorry, or potentially a sale. So there's your kind of one in, one out. And so be interesting to see, we'll get an idea of kind of feel when business might be around the corner potentially, and what we do with the squad, you know, whether we start recalling players from loans. It's probably a good indicator that more business is around the corner. So let's sit and wait and see. But yeah, I'm not too sure on this one, mate. And I think, yeah, we'll look and see how this one unravels. But it's going to be, you know, a big few days. We're now at the 15th, the halfway point in the January window. Things are going to start hotting up from here, if they are to hot up any further, you'd imagine. So, you know, this podcast is definitely the best place to keep yourselves tuned on that one. You and I will be scouring Twitter for the latest rumors to keep you guys kind of informed. But I'm not expecting it to be crazy, but you never know, mate. You never know. It's going to be, we'll have to see what happens with someone like Traoré. Just wanted to wish him well. Best of luck.
Absolutely.
His AFCON tournament kicks off tomorrow with Burkina Faso. They are in Group D, along with Algeria, who are currently beating Angola 1-0. They play Mauritania tomorrow at AFCON, 2 o'clock kickoff for anyone working from home.
It's
One Sky Sports. So tune in, see Bertie doing the business out in the Ivory Coast. Let's hope he plays well. Let's hope he balls out, drops some madness, so we can get some cash for him.
Absolutely, mate. Absolutely. I think, you know, he wouldn't mind the cash as well. He wouldn't mind the cash. I'm sure he's not going to want that money to drop too much, is he? Now with his contract coming up. But yeah, guys, let us know your thoughts on all them deals in the comments down below, and your thoughts on the game. It's going to be interesting to see sort of what happens. The break sort of happened at a really good time, because if any business was to happen, probably going to happen this next week, isn't it, mate? So as Dan said, make sure that you've got notifications on. Make sure you are subscribed to Heart of the Hole YouTube channel and Apple, Spotify, everywhere else, Twitter, where else? TikTok. Guys, follow us on TikTok. TikTok feels like it's dipped a little bit, but, you know, like, there's good content on TikTok. So, guys, don't want to be there.
Just whilst we're, shall I do a quick check? We've had a fair few lead changes in the old FPL group.
Yes. You're having a blinder, mate, by the way. I don't know. You bought this out of the bag.
Yo, Stranger Things is back, baby. by back, I mean we're 12. But honestly, considering if any of you, no doubt some of you will have been like, where's Dan and Dan? Where, how they're doing in the league? You will know that 12th is a big time comeback from me. So,
absolutely.
Yeah, we're doing well. But yeah, David Smullen, if you're listening, mate, you've been on an absolute rocket. You're challenging right at the top. There's been a lot of league changes in there. Carl Hassan has come out of nowhere. He's now in third. The top 10 is always, always changing. It's a madness to be fair. We've got 90 people in this league, which I think is just amazing. So if you're in that league, shout out to everybody that's in it. There's a shirt. We probably haven't plugged this in a while. Right. The winner gets a shirt of their choice, a Villa shirt, which is at the end of the season. So if you're liking the look, we know this is the last season with Castor, but if you're liking any of the kits you've seen from this season and you want one and you don't want to pay for it, get in our FPL league, because we're giving one away at the end of the season.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Dan, you put it beautifully. I've not looked at the league in a while. Chloe's fallen off. For guys who don't know, that's Dan's burner. That's Dan's burner.
I've basically just been forgetting to do it. I looked at her team the other day and it was like Salah, Trent, like all these guys, Harden was still in it. I was like, Chloe, I've kind of failed you here. So she's fallen off. But I've done some transfers for her /me. And so let's see. I've kind of got two shots at this. I'm glad that she did, because for a while she was second. And I was like, you know, if you win this, I'm not going to give you a shirt. Like,
right.
But she's getting all excited. Right. I was like, no, I can't just give it to my girlfriend. So I'm kind of glad that she's fallen off, because that potentially, you know, means that I avoid any kind of awkwardness at the end of the season where I have to explain to all of you guys, the viewers, that my girlfriend /me has won the group. And that's the same for me. Like, I don't really want to win it. I'm kind of scared, as I mentioned at the top, because I'm like, I don't want to come top of this. I want to give it to one of you guys.
Well, on that same issue, mate, Charlotte's fourth, which is me.
Yes.
She's fourth.
She's fourth. Some tactical transfers there, mate. You need to like, look at it. I think, you know, you get some Luton Town players in there.
Feel like Ross Barkley.
Feel like he's, you know, definitely a move in there. Get some, you know, some £4 million players to really boost that team. The points will drop off. Conscious cleared.
I think that's all we're going to have to do. That's all we're going to have to do. But yeah, guys, if you aren't, links in the link tree in the description down below for everything that we just mentioned, FPL, all that as well. So yeah, like, comment, subscribe, and up the Villa.